When we talk about youth sports in the United States, they're often seen as an important part of growing up and as a means of economic mobility. But in recent years, that story about American youth sports has become further from the truth. Research has shown that the cost of playing sports has gone up in tandem with the increasing income inequality, and that means fewer kids from lower and middle class backgrounds are participating in athletics, while more and more of their wealthy peers are taking part. So we have reporter Amy Peakey, who wrote about this issue for CBS Money Watch. Welcome to The Takeaway, Amy.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
So what prompted you to look into this?
Well, there are a couple things that happened. One is I have a daughter who's 14, and last year in eighth grade, she played volleyball, and she played at her school, and that was totally free. And then she said, you know, there's a club team that I want to join. And she tried out and she got in, and it was $700 to join. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. Like, okay, it's a little bit of money, but that's fine. And then I soon came to understand that as part of joining this team, it's not just the fee to join it, but they would travel almost every weekend or every other weekend to all around New England to different competitions and games and tournaments. And so there's the cost of driving. Often you have to get a hotel. You know, the competitions, tournaments would be 8 hours away. And I realized this is really expensive. I mean, it really adds up. And then I started to see some research. There's a recent report from RAND about this very issue about income inequality in youth sports. And I thought, you know, this really is kind of explaining a lot about what I'm seeing. So I just decided to look into it. And what I found was really pretty startling. The numbers are kind of dismal. It shows that for children and families that earn less than $75,000 a year, which is middle class, youth sports participation is declining. And that really startled me. And RAND found that the number one reason parents say their kids are dropping out is the cost. People just can't afford these fees. They can't afford to travel, the uniforms, the equipment, and just the fees to join these clubs and these teams.
So how did we get here? I mean, how long have costs been rising? Has it always been this way?
It wasn't this way maybe a generation ago. I think this is a pretty recent phenomenon, maybe the last 10, 20 years. And there are kind of two parts to this. One is that there's the rise of club sports. You know, these private groups, or your kid joins the club. It costs a fee, like my daughter's volleyball team. And they increasingly travel to tournaments that aren't close to home, and that adds to the cost. And that's something that really didn't happen maybe like in the 70s, maybe even the 80s. So it's kind of relatively new phenomenon. And it's kind of funny because my husband grew up as a very active in sports. And he said, you know, when I grew up, we just played the team the next town over. You know, we didn't travel halfway across the region or, you know, 8-hour trip. So I think this is really kind of a newer phenomenon. And then the other side of it is that public schools increasingly are charging kids to play sports. And this is because budgets are being cut in some schools. And so they're asking parents to pay, you know, $100, $200, $300 to play a sport. I thought it was interesting that there was in Ohio, that depends on which district you live in, you could end up spending $1,000 to have your kids play several sports during a school year, and you live the next town over, and it's totally free. So it really depends on your school district as well. But, you know, $1,000 can be a lot of money for a family.
Especially, I mean, if the family is in public school and probably not able to afford private school, so that is an added cost here. And that's often called pay-to-play system. I'm curious about whether or not there are certain sports that are more expensive than others. I mean, we mentioned volleyball, but there are folks that talk about the so-called country club sports. I think back to what I was calling mistakenly rowing, but it's crew, right? Like, how does that even factor into this equation? Things like that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I interviewed Tom Ferry, who's with the Aspen Institute, and he's done a ton of research on sports and the different costs of sports. And they found that the average family is spending about $700 a year to help their kids with their sports interests. But it really does depend on which sport you're playing. So, you know, some are pretty reasonable, like cross country is not super expensive. You know, some of the sports where maybe you just put running shoes on and you go. But some of the sports, parents are paying up to $35,000 a year on their kids to participate in these sports. And the most expensive one was tennis, which I don't think is probably a surprise for a lot of people. But, you know, you get your kid involved in, you know, a tennis club, you send them to tennis camp, you know, and that all adds up. And so, you know, some they must be very wealthy families that are spending that much.
We hear a lot, Amy, about this idea that athletic scholarships are the ticket to higher education, especially for low-income families. How realistic is that today, given this sort of pay-to-play system that's even infiltrating public schools?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a very interesting question as well, because what's kind of driving this whole investment in kids and in their sports is the idea that it's going to help them get into an elite college. And perhaps even more interesting to some families is that the athletic scholarship. But there is a mismatch between the perception of how many kids are going to get those scholarships and who is getting those scholarships. For instance, TD Ameritrade did a study on this, and they found that 20% of parents believe their children are going to get an athletic scholarship, but only 10% do. So, you know, the chances of your kid getting that athletic scholarship aren't great. However, you know, playing a sport can help you get into a college. And I think that's also driving a lot of that, you know, drive to invest in your kids, send them to tennis camp, get them the best equipment. And I think that's what we saw, partly what we saw in the college admissions scandal. You know, kids got into these elite colleges because they got spots on different teams, rowing team, you know, tennis team, soccer, even though they, you know, they didn't play the sport. I mean, these are families that the children do play the sports, but, you know, that's what they're kind of hoping, that they'll get one of those very coveted spots on a college team and get into the college.
Fascinating stuff. Amy Peake is a reporter with CBS Money Watch. Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Doug from Redmond, Washington. Yes, our daughter is involved in competitive gymnastics, the Junior Olympics program. It is extremely expensive, and we're fortunate to be able to provide the opportunity for our daughter. We decided the cost was worth the life lessons in personal development, in grit, perseverance, time management, team building, friendships, nutrition management, etc., etc.
Hi, this is Jesse calling from Mobile, Alabama. My kids do play sports, not terribly expensive, more so shoes, gas for travel. They chose the sports they wanted to play. It's parks and it's at their school. So there's just pick up and drop off, snacks and our beverages, storage space for videos that we shoot for the games, and that's about it.
Hi, my name is Jim. I'm from Seattle, Washington. My son plays in numerous types of sports. It's very costly. For instance, just for soccer, we paid $3,000 for 6 months for him to participate in a premier club. That excludes gear, that excludes travel.
We're talking about inequities in youth sports, which can also translate to the same problems in college sports. In fact, 2/3 of all NCAA athletes are white. Warrior superstar Steph Curry made waves earlier this week when he announced a plan to take on some of this gap, announcing a big donation to help create a golf program with scholarships at Howard University. But one program at a historically black college won't fix the NCAA's inequity problem. I spoke with two guests about this issue. Sahil Desai is associate editor at The Atlantic, and Dr. Willis Jones is associate professor at the University of Kentucky College of Education. And Willis started by giving me his reaction to Steph Curry's donation to Howard.
I thought it was great. There's a real kind of feel-good element to the story that I think is really cool. You have a Howard student reaching out to one of the biggest superstars in the world. And from that relationship, they're able to bring a sizable donation to the university. So I think that's why many news outlets picked it up, is because it has this really great kind of feel-good element to it. There were two aspects of the partnership that really stood out for me, however. One was the fact that you had a African-American celebrity who did not attend a historically black college give a sizable donation to a black college. The second part that stood out for me was I started to ask myself, well, I wonder where Howard was going to find students, especially non-white students, if that was their interest, to play golf at the institution, because golf, like many other sports, has seen a pretty significant decline in youth participation over the last 10 years, especially when it comes to low income and people of color. And that's in part due to the expense of the sport and the other elements play into it. So I began to think about how strategic Howard was going to be when it came to recruiting student athletes for those positions on the golf team. So I think those are the things that really stood out to me when I first heard about the story.
Sahil, let's talk about other universities and collegiate level sports. When we're talking about things like golf or crew or lacrosse in particular, those are the ones that really come to mind that really extend themselves to scholarship opportunities for students. Who are we talking about? What kinds of students really make up this type of athletic demographic?
Well, we're overwhelmingly talking about white students here. I think there's this tendency to assume that lots of college athletes are African American or students of color, and that's definitely true in the high-profile sports, namely football and basketball. But if you get beyond that, lots of the sort of, frankly, country club sports that are at these universities are overwhelmingly white. So, for example, something like 85% of NCAA lacrosse players are white, 90% of ice hockey players. I think it's something like 77% of golf players are white. So overwhelmingly, these college athletes tend to be affluent white students.
You've also written in your piece at The Atlantic that college sports at elite schools in particular are, and I'm using you're saying they're calling them a, quote, affirmative action for affluent white students. It's interesting that when we talk about college sports, often the focus is on black athletes and whether or not they, you know, quote unquote, deserve to get into the school that they got into because they're there on a sports scholarship. But the same analysis often doesn't apply to white students. Sahil, can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by affirmative action there for white students?
Yeah, I think lots of these white students, when they come to campus as athletes, they get an admissions bump in the process that's somewhat analogous to the bump that other racial minorities get in what we call affirmative action. And the types of bumps that tend to be critiqued a lot, especially on the right. And I think the admissions bump for athletes just doesn't tend to be talked about in the same way, even though based on the research that I've seen, the bump that's given to athletes tends to be much larger than the bump that is given to racial minorities or legacy applicants, which are also critiqued heavily.
Well, there's a lot of times when students get sports scholarships for the sports they play, does it always mean that they're getting a full ride to the university? Does that translate into everything being paid for? And extending on that, who would really benefit from this scholarship fund from Steph Curry?
Absolutely not. So I think one of the misnomers is that student athletes receive full scholarships no matter what sport they play. And that's simply not the case. Once you get outside of the quote unquote revenue sports, so basketball and football, most student athletes are on partial scholarships. And I think there's some data that would suggest that the vast majority of student athletes actually graduate with somewhere in the area of about $12,000 in student loan debt. And so the vast majority of people who would be able to take advantage of that are going to be individuals who, one, played golf early in life. And those tend to be individuals who are a little bit more affluent. But they also would have to be able to cover the remaining cost of going to college even when they get that partial scholarship. And so I think that Howard would need to be very strategic about reaching out to individuals from low socioeconomic backgrounds if they want to use these scholarships to maybe bring a little bit more socioeconomic diversity into the sport, which from what I've read is one of the things that Steph Curry wanted to do in sponsoring the program at Howard.
And I'm wondering, Willis, how does that translate into who ends up getting to benefit from scholarships? If these kids aren't able to, if low-income kids in particular or kids of color, or both, aren't able to start accessing these programs, these sports early on, you know, what does that say about the class diversity that we see in a lot of these universities, in HBCUs in particular?
Well, as mentioned earlier, I mean, once you get outside of football, basketball, and track and field, the vast majority of NCAA student athletes are white. Some 70% are white. So you see that those scholarships that are put forward, and these are often, it's not something that I think the NCAA promotes very heavily. I think they, part of their identity is this idea that if you have the talent and you have the will to be a good athlete and student, then anyone is going to be able to come in and get access to college through athletics. And while that is the case in a lot of instances, the vast majority of individuals who are able to take advantage of some of the scholarship money that's available are white students and are affluent students. And I think we saw a lot of this manifest itself in the recent college admission scandal that we saw. A vast majority of those instances, you had a situation where a student was supposedly playing a country club sport and getting an admissions bump from that, where the coaches were vouching for him after coaches were paid under the table and things of that sort. So it just kind of highlights who's able to take advantage of that. And it's usually going to be individuals who are a bit more affluent and increasingly individuals who are that are white.
Dr. Willis Jones is an associate professor at the University of Kentucky College of Education, and Sahil Desai is an associate editor at The Atlantic. Thanks to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.